chairman welcomes Chef Gabrielle Hamilton. Chef Hamilton, welcome.
Thank you.
You are a chef and a writer. So can you cook up a happy ending in Kitchen Stadium?
You just lick it, suck on it.
I'm sure you would do very well. And now, the battle begins!
Say hey, everybody. It's Iron Chef Philly-san. How about them Dodgers, man? Woo! How's everybody doing? My name is Phil. This is My Life as a Foodie. And I'm happy to be here. Just got back from a short weekend jaunt to the wine region of Napa, Sonoma, here in Northern California. Had a good time. Drove a lot. Drove about 1,200 miles in 4 days. 3 days, sorry. So that was a lot of driving. Had beer at Russian River Brewing. Drank some interesting things there. I've been there so many times, and every time I go, it's like the same experience, and it's great. And I always miss it after I leave. But really good beer there. Had dinner at Ad Hoc in Yountville. This is an interesting story. And that, you know, if people ask me what my favorite restaurant is, and I don't go out a whole lot, that's it. I mean, I've been to a lot of restaurants. A lot of restaurants I've revisited. Ad Hoc is my favorite. That's how I like to eat, and it's how I like to cook. Anyway, so we sat next to these guys. These guys sit down. They're getting the royal treatment from the staff. Like everybody knows them. They show up. They've got a bottle of French rosé. They put it on ice for them. They come out. They cork it at the table. You know, they're pouring wine for them. They're there every 3 minutes. I mean, everybody seems to know them. The manager of the restaurant is coming over talking to them. They seem to know everybody. And before you know it, they're dropping names like Thomas this and Thomas that. It turns out they know Keller. Thomas this, Thomas that. He's working for charity. You know, he's out with his assistant. It turns out he travels over 300 days a year for charity. He's at that restaurant a lot. Anyway, these guys are getting married, and they want to make sure that he and Laura, who I guess is his girlfriend, can be at the reception. And then Thomas told the manager that if he saw them, to let them know that he wanted them to invite him and Laura over for dinner. But now they're afraid to have him for dinner because they don't want to cook for Keller. Anyway, so my wife, God bless her, she leans in. She goes, did you guys say you're getting married? Congratulations. You want to talk about an icebreaker. These two guys probably have it tough. And now they're going to get married and they're probably facing all sorts of resistance. She says, congratulations. Perfect. These guys start talking and talking. I told them what a big fan of Thomas Keller I was, and that if he wanted to come to my place for dinner, I'd probably shit my pants, but I'd definitely do it. I think I asked me, he goes, are you a chef? I said, no, I'm a home cook. But I've learned a lot about technique from people like Keller and Keller. I could probably cook this dinner we're having, no problem. But my friend Jill, she could cook circles around me and the cooks there. And anyway, it was a really unique experience. So that's about as close as I figured I was going to get to Keller, ever. And the guy probably gets his ass kissed a lot, too, so, yeah, that happens. Anyway, the Bouchon Bakery is right down the street. Bouchon, the other restaurant that Keller owns, is just, you know, about a block and a half up. And Bouchon Bakery's right next to it. So we went in there, and this place is like a bakery in France. I've never been to France, but I've seen, like, you know, video and pictures and stuff of the bakers and the bakeries that are there. They have these giant stoves, exactly the same stoves. And they're making bread exactly the same way. They've got this really long wooden spatula that they, you know, use to go all the way into the back of this hot oven to pull the bread out. And they pull these things out, these rolls, and they're perfect. We had these chocolate croissants, best croissants I've ever had in my life. Can't even describe them. I can't describe how good they were. And their website for Bouchon Bakery says that they try to get as authentic French as they can. They went to France. They learned how to bake from French bakers. They bought the same stoves. They use the same ingredients. It's about as close to a French bakery, an authentic French bakery, that you're going to get. These things were light and fluffy. Apparently, they use a little butter. Anyway, really good food experience. Just how I like to cook and eat. And You know, if I lived up there, I'd be there a lot. Once a month, at least. I'd be 500 pounds. Anyway, we're going to do some interesting things on the show today. We're going to drink a beer, of course. But we're featuring some food that you probably would not have thought of eating. And I'm not going to push you to eat it, but I like it. And so this is about me, not you, anyway. Truth be told. But I'm going to give you a rundown of a bunch of beers that I'm not going to taste on the show, but I have already tasted from the brewery. Give you a complete rundown of brewery, all right? So I can stop, you know, yapping on about it and tell you all about the beer. But we're going to start with an interesting beer here, Big Swell IPA from Maui Brewing Company. And it's one of the unique beers because comes in a can. Oh, yeah, I like IPAs in a can. Wait, that didn't sound right. It's darker than I remember. I bought a six-pack of this stuff, about $8. I don't know if it's available everywhere. It's certainly available here on the West Coast. But, ooh, I can smell it from here. It's dark, cloudy as hell, malty. Smells really good. It smells like citrus, like lemons or grapefruit. It's amazing to me when you play with hops and malt and the combination. There's so many flavors you can get out of these things because the hops all taste different. And then you you know, how much you use and when you use it and what type you're using and then what kind of malt you play with. You can make flavors that aren't there, like apricots. And one of the flavors I get from this is apricot. There's no apricot in this beer, but I taste apricot. Maybe I'm weird. Yeah, I'm weird, but I do taste apricot. Anyway, it was great beer for this show. Freaking great. 6.2 ABV, 60 IBUs. Perfect for this. I wouldn't go any more than that. I might start getting tacky. Whew. So I wanted to do a show about hops. All right? I thought, India Pale Ale. Okay. You figure that much. Then I thought about frogs. Because both of them use hops. And while I enjoy hops in IPA, I don't really care for hops in a frog. So we kill them, take their skin off, season them, dredge them in seasoned flour, fry them in olive oil, and eat them. And that's exactly what I've been enjoying today. I bought some farm-raised frog legs from a local gourmet hole in the wall over here, brought them home, seasoned them with salt and pepper, set them aside, and then in another bowl, I put flour, and I seasoned that with some sea salt, cracked black pepper, garlic powder, and onion powder. So I made a nice little flour mixture, and then I dredged the frog legs in the flour and dropped them in a pan of olive oil over medium heat, about 3 minutes aside, and they're done. Serve them on a plate with a nice lemon wedge, give them a spritz of lemon, eat these little buggers. And frog is delicious. You know, it sounds gross to you, right? It sounds gross because you're thinking of it as that fat, ugly creature in the swamp. All right, you think like that, it's going to turn your stomach. So don't think like that. Think like the French. Think of these things. They're raised on a farm. They're raised as food. They live on clean grain. They get plump, and you kill them. You kill them, you clean them, you take the skin off, you drop them in hot oil. I'll tell you something else. I've been eating these things for about, I don't know, 20 minutes. A lot of people say they taste like chicken. I actually think they taste like chicken. There's no other way to describe it. It's like chicken, dude. If it was expensive, I'd say, well, I'm just going to eat chicken. I'll tell you, though, with this, it's a good compliment. This Big Swell IPA Maui Brewing, I don't normally try to pair, but this does pair really well. I did good. I'll pat myself on the back. Nice job, Philly. Nice job, Wilbur. So I know a lot of you guys are probably not going to run out and buy these things, or you wouldn't even do it if I pushed you, so I'm going to spare you, all right? But let me just say, French are onto something with stuff like this. These are flipping delicious. I'll tell you something else. You look at the pictures. I got a picture on the website. I made a screen show, a slideshow. I haven't done it in a long time, but I did one for this because there's a lot of pictures I wanted to share. So there's a slideshow on the website. Check it out, zeroface.wordpress.com. But on the pictures, you look at these things, all right? If you were to take a knife, split these legs apart, sauce them with some Louisiana hot sauce, and then I served them to you. And I didn't tell you what they were. I told you maybe they were a special kind of chicken wing. If I laid them down I would bet big money that you would be eating them during a football game and you'd tell me how great they were. Seriously, it tastes that much like chicken. So here's to you, Kermit, delicious little bastard.
After that experience, eating the fresh bull's balls and scrotum stew seems pretty tame.
Well, here's something that is kind of beyond cool, especially for me. I've mentioned it before, and I went into it earlier this week. I'm a big Dodger fan. Big LA Dodger fan. I've been a fan of them all my life. It runs in my family. Whole family's Dodger fans. My mom rooted for the Brooklyn Dodgers when she was a kid back in New York. And our family, you know, practically followed them out here when they made their big move to LA in the 50s. So now we're in the playoffs, and this story just gets a little bit better for me. The Wall Street Journal ran this story on Dodgers outfielder Andre Ethier, and he has a food blog that's hosted by Major League Baseball, diningwithdre.mlblogs.com, mlblogs.com. So anyway, back in June, Andre starts taking pictures of all the dishes he's eating at his favorite restaurants here in LA and posts them on his blog, and he calls it Dining with Dre. And he said, you know, he started doing this because it was a way of him to keep his mind off of baseball, pressures of being a baseball, you know, player. But I thought it was cool that a baseball player did something like this. And that turns out to be Andre Ethier, who, you know, is one of our favorite players on the Dodgers now. Just really, he represents the team very well, the organization. My friend and I attended a Dodger game last month. Ethier went 5 for 5 that night, came a triple away from hitting for the cycle, actually went for the triple and got called out. It was a great night. We pounded the Diamondbacks, started our serious run towards the finishing line, won the National League West that night, you know, was the start of all that. Now we're in the playoffs against the Cubs, and, you know, just kind of cool. Anyway, check it out if you're interested. There's probably other blogs on there for baseball players. diningwithdre.mlblogs.com. Okay, so the weekend after we released the show on Orchard White Clams that used the beer from the brewery, my wife and I decided to visit Patrick and Rachel at their tasting room at the brewery here in Placentia. So we went to our farmer's market, did our circles there, had lunch, made it down to the brewery on our way back home, and a nice place. They have a really nice size area for brewing, really good-looking equipment. It looks like they've got a little room to expand if they get, you know, bigger. If the demand becomes overwhelming, which I hope happens for them. I think it's a big possibility. They're located at 715 Dunway in Placentia, by the way. It's right off the 57 freeway at Orangethorpe. If you're in the area and want to check them out, you won't be disappointed. Thebrewery.com if you want more information. The tasting room is open Friday, 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. They do a tour at 6, and then they're open again on Saturday, 12 to 6, and they do a tour at 4. So the tasting room is in the back of the brewery, not the front, in the back. Patrick and Rachel are the consummate hosts. Very friendly, very accommodating. The bar is beautiful. Very Pottery Barn looking, you know. He's got Belgian-style goblet glasses with his logo on them. Do you taste out of those? You're not tasting out of 4-ounce sipper cups. You know, those are kind of lame. Can't really taste really good beer out of sipper cups. He's got this giant high-def projection screen on the wall. DirecTV. He's got sports on there or news if something big is happening. That day something big was happening. The coolest thing, I thought, was that other brewers drink there. Now, we met a pair of brewers from Left Coast Brewing. It's a brewery that's associated with Augie's Pizza out here on the West Coast. And I'm going to look into that soon, too, because they were very friendly. Sound like really good brewers. They can brew their own stuff. And, you know, when other brewers are there tasting your beer, you know maybe you're onto something because you got other brewers there drinking it. Very complimentary, too. So their beer is heavily Belgian-influenced. And it appears that they are, too. They've been to Belgium before and want to go again. Rachel lays out these cone-shaped holders. They have newspaper inserts, kind of like the one you'd get if you went to a Belgian restaurant and you ordered frites, just like that. She lays out all these different types of nuts and cheeses to pair with certain beers. There's a cheese shop here in Orange called Frog's Breath, and they sell all these fancy, insane cheeses. And they're pairing it with, you know, different beers there. Just first class. Very first class. And they have a dog. He's a white lab. Sweetest thing you could ever meet. Name's Barley. Total sweetheart. I got a nice picture of Barley on the slideshow. So check that out, too. Anyway, so the beer. Okay, let's get to the beer. We've had Orchard White. All right, so I've told you about that. You know my feelings were on that one. And because I just had it, I passed on it. Because I wanted to get to the other beers that he had. But I thought that beer was fantastic and clean, and it proved itself already. So we started with Black Orchard, and that's a Belgian-style black wheat beer. Now, I wouldn't call it a black wit, because I don't see much of a resemblance between that and a wit. But the presence of wheat was a fantastic thing. It was 5.7% alcohol, 15 IBUs, and it tasted like a Belgian Dunkelweiss. Does that make sense? Is that even such a thing? Belgian Dunkelweiss. Had a really deep body, not really sweet, but just sweet enough, you know, a soft finish, very soft, solid beer. Little bit of roastiness too, just a tiny bit. Maybe black patent malt, not sure. Definitely not harsh. I'd be surprised if he used any heavily roasted malts in a beer like that, like chocolate or roasted barley. It wasn't a stout, just a nice, clean, dark wheat beer, very delicious. So we had that. Then we had Saison Roux, and that's a California farmhouse Saison. They brew it with 30% rye, and they finish it with Brettanomyces, I think in the bottle. I think he puts Brett in the bottle and they bottle it. 8.5% ABV. Now, I didn't get an overwhelming funk from the beer. Maybe because of its young age, I'm not sure. He told me Brettanomyces, I thought funk. I didn't taste that. I've got a bottle of it, cellaring right now. And I'll take it out next year sometime and give it a try. Maybe it'll be funkier. I think it will. A beer like this, I think, just gets better and better with age. It was nice and citrusy, spicy. The carbonation was dead perfect. Again, not all funked out. But if it got funky, it might make it better. Saison's an open book. That's why I like it so much. You can Brett the hell out of it or leave it alone. You know, either way, it's great. Depends on what you like. Then make it how you like it. But you put rye in it, and I love that. Makes the beer earthier. Gave the beer a really unique, earthy flavor. I had not tasted that in a Saison before. Definitely earthier than anything I'd had like that. Okay, so that's a winner too, right? So then we do Trade Winds Triple, and that's a Belgian triple. It's kind of unique because he used rice in the beer. He brewed it with the rice and then adds Thai basil. Now, I read he used Thai basil, and I thought, oh, I'm going to smell Caprese salad, right, when I open it. But I didn't. And Thai basil was real subtle, very subtle. And again, it's not up in your face, you know. If I told you I used basil in my beer, you'd think you're going to be drinking pesto, right? That wasn't the case. I mean, it was slightly herbal, not overwhelming. And I think that's where the success in a beer like this kind of lies. He uses flavors to make the beer unique. And if you didn't know there was basil in it, you'd say, what the hell is that flavor? You couldn't put your finger on it. And then, you know, that's really why it's a success. Really full mouthfeel. Tangy, hoppy finish. Really very satisfying. Good body, nice and spicy. This one was 8.5% ABV, 25 IBUs, which is also, you know, perfect. So then next we tried Berliner Weiss. Now, this wasn't available in bottles. This was out of keg. Everything I had up to this point, the Orchard White, Black Orchard, Saison Roux, and the Trade Winds Triple, all available in bottles. The Berliner Weiss was on tap only. This was out of a keg, and it was something else. He said he adds lactobacillus and Brettanomyces to sour the beer, because he makes it with wheat, which would make it sweet. So he puts sour in it to kind of, you know, balance it. Really clean. Not funky, again. Not funky. Very clean. Easy to drink. A little tart on its own. So Rachel grabs these bottles of flavoring syrups from the back of the bar, starts adding them to the glasses. Raspberry, I think it was. It was a little fruity, but on its own, very clean. And I think the ABV was around 3%, so you could drink it all day. Very light session beer. Then what happens next is a little cloudy to me because I was drinking. Maybe I just wasn't paying attention. I think we had the same beer dry hopped. If it wasn't, it was something else, but he dry hopped it. I think it was this beer. I'm not sure. Anyway, he pours this thing, right? Smells like hops. It reeks of hops. He said 2 pounds of hops per barrel. I mean, this is like really grassy, and you think you're going to taste a hop bomb. But then you drink it. It's like magic. No bitterness. All up in the nose. You want to talk about a head fuck? This thing blew my mind. This is about the time Patrick starts laying down this theory on brewing beer, and this kills me. He says he wants his beers to have dual personalities. He said that, dual personalities. I love that. I love it because that's exactly what he's doing. He achieves that. You know, you think you're about to drink hop sauce. No, it's just a nice clean beer. Smells a lot like hops, but just a clean, clean beer. Now, you think the Black Orchard is going to be a stout, but no, it's a Dunkelweiss. or something like that. He plays with these ingredients, makes the beers unique, and it's a bold move. It takes a lot of balls. It's a step that defines the art of brewing, I think. And I think we've lost sight of that a lot. Because brewing isn't art. Don't forget that. Brewing is art. You know, Patrick has definitely taken that to task, and he keeps it in mind. So we finished with one more beer. There was more beer to drink, but we had this last one, and that was it for us. My wife fell in love with this. Autumn Maple. It's not available right now. Should be available in a couple weeks. She said it's going to start hitting shelves soon. This was off the charts. I started to get the impression maybe Patrick was nuts. It's a Belgian brown ale, all right? But he brews it to be like a pumpkin beer, except he doesn't use pumpkin. He uses yams. Now, why not use yams? They're sweeter, right? You got cloves and all sorts of fall flavors, the pumpkin spices. Holy crap. 10% alcohol, and it's the perfect complete winter warmer right up in your face. I love the hell out of this thing. You taste it, you pick up cinnamon. You taste it again, you're tasting vanilla or nutmeg or ginger or cloves. Everything was always different. I almost felt cheated that I couldn't buy bottles of it right then. So my wife's going, you know, this would go great over vanilla ice cream. And then she's right. I made beer floats before with chocolate stout. You should try that sometime. Oh, man, is that good. But this would be a great dessert. And what he's been doing lately, Patrick, is he's mixing beers together. Calls them melanges, or melange? M-E-L-A-N-G-E-S. My French sucks. I can't try. But he recently mixed autumn maple with a six-week-old lambic, called it a yambic. And that's going to be good. Nice sweet beer, tarred it up. Brilliant. Anyway, Patrick and Tyler, it's his brewer there. They do fantastic things. Patrick was a home brewer, came away with a bunch of awards, went to law school, decides, yeah, I'm chasing a dream. Open a brewery. Hope it works out. And I think he did do the right thing, and I think he's going to be a big success. There are oak aging beers in there now, too. It's got lots of barrels, ages them for a long time. He's got an anniversary beer, makes a lot of different beers. A lot of them are keg only. He's very patient. He brews in a Belgian style, and he does what craft brewers are supposed to be doing, you know, making art with the beer. So hats off to the brewery. Distributed by Stone, hopefully further into California, onto the West Coast, and then someday into other states. He's going to be at the Great American Beer Festival, so make sure you go down there and see them. If you're going to the GABF this year, I think that's either next weekend or the weekend after, check them out. Thebrewery.com. All right? I swear it's worthy of all the hype I'm laying down. I know I'm laying it on thick, but it's worth it. They're definitely worth it. Thebrewery.com.
And now, something I've never tasted before.
Nothing like a little preserved tuna sperm to kind of cap off a good meal.
So if you listen to the show, you know I'm not a big fan of pita, right? Anyone who's so narrow-minded that they forget that animals are basically put here for us to eat, I'm not a big fan of anybody who doesn't get that. But sometimes they do stuff that does benefit people and definitely benefits foodies. PETA has released a video about a couple weeks ago, I think now. It shows these pigs being abused at an Iowa farm. Did you see this on television? It was all over the place. These two PETA nuts went undercover at an Iowa pig farm. They shot video that shows workers hitting pigs with metal rods, slamming pigs on a concrete floor, little baby pigs, brag about putting, you know, rods up their asses. You want to talk about some sick bastards? They sprayed a pig in the face with blue paint for like almost a half a minute, and then it suffocated and it died. Well, I'm sure that tasted great, you know, when it finally made it to someone's table. This is what I'm talking about. When I tell you at farms like Veritas and Woolly Pig and all the little family farms, they're valuable because they treat animals with respect while they're alive. Yeah, they're all going to die. They have to. That's part of the gig. But there's no reason to treat them like crap while they're alive. It's just not right, first of all, but it damages the delicate flavor of the meat. I've been saying it forever. On this video, which I'm just going to play the audio for you. Trust me, you don't want to watch it. If you haven't, you save yourself. The AP got a hold of it, and then we got it from ABC affiliate KAAL in Austin, Minnesota. Supervisor tells an undercover investigator on the video, the PETA guy. He says, when I get angry or, you know, a cow won't move, I grab all these rods, I put it right up her ass. Nice. Well, that's great. This farm was outside of Bayard, Iowa. It's about 60 miles west of Des Moines. And the key here was that it's a supplier to Hormel Foods, which is based in Austin, Minnesota, up there. So PETA wanted to use the results of the investigation to pressure Hormel, who makes Spam and all these other products, to demand that the suppliers use humane treatment of pigs. And rightly so.
Animal rights group People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA, says it sent a worker undercover using a hidden camera to expose the treatment that these pigs were enduring at a hog farm near Des Moines, Iowa.
You gotta hurt them. Hold them. Yeah, just tap them on my hand, get them off. They got to work great,
The video sent to ABC 6 News shows workers kicking and beating the hogs. Baby pigs were even killed after being slammed to the ground, and a hog that PETA says suffocated after a blue chemical was sprayed up its snout.
Over the course of 3 months, PETA documented routine abuse and neglect of pigs at the hands of workers and managers at this farm, including frequent kicking and beatings of pigs, many heavily pregnant, with weapons ranging from metal gate rods and herding canes to workers' fists.
Some of the workers were even caught on tape asking if the undercover worker had ever heard of PETA.
There's nobody working for PETA out here. You know who PETA is?
I think I heard of
it. That's protection for protection for the environmental treatment of animals and some of those workers that I hate them.
PETA says this farm does ship pigs to plants operated by Austin-based Hormel Foods. ABC 6 News contacted Hormel Foods about this video. They declined to go on camera, but they did issue a statement. A company spokeswoman says, quote, "This is appalling," and she says it's completely unacceptable and inconsistent with their standards for animal handling. The National Pork Producers Council says they are also always on the lookout for animal abuse.
We believe that our animals need to be cared for humanely, and we are always looking for the best interests and the well-being of our animals.
PETA has filed a complaint with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. They also sent the video to the sheriff in Greene County, Iowa. They want to see charges of animal abuse against the 18 people who are working on the farm.
A bunch of douchebags. You know, everybody, this is where your cheap meat comes from, all right? Just so you know. It's not just this place. It's every place like it. And it's a small taste of what you're not seeing, really. Now, these stories pop up all the time. It's not like they just select certain farms or processing plants. This is prevalent. This is where that cheap value menu 99-cent chicken sandwich is coming from. You know, that 59-cent hamburger, that's where this comes from. It's a great value. Tastes great, too. Of course it tastes great. I pull a dog turd out of the yard over here, and I put enough MSG on it and special spices. It's not going to taste much like a dog turd anymore. Eric Schlosser's book, Fast Food Nation, full of this stuff. It's full of it. And it's not isolated. It's prevalent. Happens all the time. And it's going to continue to happen. Because we're not going to get off our lazy fat asses, put our money elsewhere, force places like this to improve. I'm not pissed off about fast food. You know, I don't hate it. I love it. What I hate are large corporations that demand cheap meat to keep their costs down. The end results are stories like this. That mom and pop burger place on the corner, you know the one I'm talking about, it's been there about 30 years. You know, they can't get contracts for meat like McDonald's. Wendy's, Burger King, Jack in the Crack, they don't have the pull or the money that the companies like that have. They've got to buy their meat elsewhere, and usually from a local distributor. So the only way they can keep their costs down is to have a strong relationship with a distributor to keep their customers happy. You know, get their meat from a distributor that more than likely works with farms or small accounts. Is the meat better? Yeah, substantially better. Animals are treated better. Nowhere near as nice as farms like Veritas or Family Farms, but it's the lesser of two evils. I'm just saying, you know, we need to reconsider sometimes where we eat when we have a choice. When you're on the run, if you're cross-country, you're starving to death, the kids are screaming, yeah, McDonald's? Perfect. But, you know, if you have a choice, it'd be nice if we thought about it the next time we're out. And on that subject, there's a new movie that I can't find a trailer for it online. It's been out for about a month or month and a half now. It was at the Toronto Film Festival. Food Inc. Like Food Incorporated. The director is Robert Kenner. He supposedly lifts the veil on our nation's food industry. We know all about it, of course, but not everybody does. exposes the highly mechanized underbelly that's been hidden from the American consumer with the consent of our government's regulatory agencies, USDA and FDA. Our nation's food supply is now controlled by a handful of corporations that often put profit ahead of consumer health, the livelihood of the American farmer, the safety of workers, and our own environment. We have bigger-breasted chickens, the perfect pork chop, insecticide-resistant soybean seeds, even tomatoes that won't go bad. But we also have new strains of E. coli, the harmful bacteria that causes illness for an estimated 73,000 Americans annually. We're riddled with widespread obesity, particularly among children, and an epidemic level of diabetes among adults. Sounds good to me. Eric Schlosser's in it. I just mentioned him, Fast Food Nation. Michael Pollan. He wrote Omnivore's Dilemma. And some other social entrepreneurs like Stonyfield Farms, Gary Hirschberg, Polyface Farms, Joe Salton. Interesting. Food Incorporated reveals surprising and often shocking truths about what we eat, how it's produced, who we've become as a nation, and where we're going from here. Participantmedia.com. I guess that's the studio. Interesting stuff. Be like to see it, though. I'm sure it'll go right to DVD. You know, anytime you make a movie that really comes out against the government, unless your name's Michael Moore and you got a shitload of money, forget about it. You're not going anywhere.
Look at the size of that thing. And that's not even the whole animal.
That's called a beauty.
Oh! 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 Oh.
Who knew that would happen? Oh, my God. This is huge.
One of the things I love the most about doing a show is getting feedback from people who listen to it. It lets me know people are listening. A lot of people ask me, what's your listenership like? And a lot of times I don't know. I don't check stats. I don't care. I know people listen. I mean, I'm getting a lot of downloads. But I know people are listening because I'm getting people commenting. And they're commenting about specific things. That's when I know people are listening. But what I love even more than just the feedback is when people send me stories or material for the show. Because I can't get to everything. There's a lot to talk about. And some of you know exactly what makes the show tick. So it really, it's a kick in the pants for me because you get it and then you become a part of it. So it becomes, you know, a participation, which I really love. So the new, somewhat new listener that we have, Jess. She's married to Scott, better known as Gambler. You guys might know by Gambler. She sends me a story. It's really good. It's a doozy. Sends me this email. Phil, I saw a story on The Wire tonight, and I knew I had to share it with you. I hope you'll comment it on someday on your podcast. Okay, so the story she sends is about PETA requesting that Ben & Jerry's makes ice cream from human breast milk. Did you catch this? This was last week sometime. How long has it been? I think PETA got about 6 minutes of me thinking they're doing the right thing. And that's it. Done. Pig farm? I'm with you. Breast milk? Not so much. You're back on my list of wackos. Oh my God, what the hell's wrong with these people? Who are these people? PETA is asking Ben & Jerry's, who makes ice cream and I think frozen yogurt, to use breast milk instead of cow's milk. You know why they said? It says it's going to reduce the suffering of cows and calves and give ice cream lovers a healthier product. Oh man, that's gross.
BB Bennett says she breastfeeds her baby, but says using breast milk for ice cream doesn't sound so good.
It's kind of weird, but they sure ain't gonna get mine.
The People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, sent a letter to Vermont's ice cream kings, Ben and Jerry, saying forget the cows, use breast milk to make ice cream. But those who love the dessert say they don't want mom's milk in their food.
You know, I'm a vegetarian. I've been a vegetarian for probably 14 years now. I have no desire to eat human breast milk at any rate, shape, or form.
Theoretically, I understand where they're coming from and their philosophy. In practice, though, I really don't want to drink human breast milk.
PETA says Ben & Jerry's should buy milk from women, that it's healthier than the stuff coming out of cows, and better for the animals. Ben & Jerry's, the company, says it's a novel idea, but says, we believe a mother's milk is best used for her child.
I think it takes away from children. I think children should be breastfed.
In its letter, PETA pointed to a restaurant in Switzerland that says it's already using breast milk in soups, stews, and sauces. But we found out that restaurant was banned from using it a few days ago.
It's very, very cold.
PETA, of course, is well known for its publicity stunts. This naked protest against leather last December among them. This time, the group says it's all about conditions cows live in. But it'll certainly be a tough sell in Vermont, where there's 153,000 dairy cows producing nearly 3 million pounds of milk a year. There's a cow on the state seal, and Ben & Jerry's uses the bovine in its logo.
With the economy as it is, it could be a great line of work for some. They're
sick mothers.
Personally, I wouldn't order it myself, but, you know, I mean, for kids, I don't think it's a bad thing at all.
And just so you know, I don't know if any people know this, it takes about a gallon and a half of milk to make 1 gallon of ice cream. I don't know how much milk you can pump out of a pair of female breasts, and I don't want to know, but that's just crazy messed up. And don't get me wrong, I love breasts. I'm a dude. We love them. My wife doesn't understand it. What's your obsession with them? I can't explain it. We just do. But I don't want to drink milk from it. That's messed up. I was watching a movie once. Movie. There was a scene with this woman who was lactating. Oh, check, please. I couldn't hit fast forward fast enough. That pita cracks me up, though, man. You know, we ran that story a couple episodes back about the cows milking themselves. And their breasts get full of milk. They want to be milked. It gets uncomfortable. They're walking around with tits full of milk. They want us to take it out of them. It's heavy. It's like luggage. And don't listen to anybody who tells you that milk's unnatural for humans either. That's bullshit. It's definitely natural. But this isn't. This is gross. And PETA gets the hottest chicks, too. These protests, like in the story they just read, when they do the naked protest for fur, anytime they say they're going to protest fur, they're going to have some naked people out there, show up. It's because there's about a 90% chance it's going to be someone really hot. I'll give them that. But man, they're on the crazy train to Luluville. And what's Ben and Jerry supposed to do? Supposed to put a drawing of a pair of titties on the logo instead of the cows? Yeah, that's not going to be a marketing nightmare, is it? You don't think that product's going to get yanked off the shelves? Some kid sees it. Mommy, look, boobies. Oh, PETA's batshit crazy, man. They've lost their minds.
Will you stop it? Are you out of your mind?
Hey, Rick from Draft Magazine has some exciting things in the work. I don't think I'm at liberty to discuss them, so I'm not going to say anything. But he's talked about it. But keep your eyes on his blog, pacificbrewnews.blogspot.com. And his website, pacificbrewnews.libsyn.com, I think. His podcast, it's on beersafari.com. He's going to have an announcement at some point. But anyway, he sent me a link to a CNN video earlier this week. It was so damn good, I had to share it with you guys. I think things are getting really bad all over the place, but in the UK, it's getting really bad. I mean, food prices are nuts. They're nuts there anyway. If you think it's bad here, you should go visit UK. Anyway, so the rising food costs, right? Global economy is what it is right now. People are turning to eat less desirable cuts of meat. You know, the roasts with all the fat in them. The stuff we've talked about here. Hearts, lungs, liver, feet, face, ears, tripe, shoulders, butt roasts, shoulder roasts, legs. All the stuff that the peasants were forced to eat before. Now people are looking at them and thinking, well, that might just be, you know, what I want to eat. The price is right.
With rising food prices and a credit crunch, many shoppers are looking for ways to cut costs, and supermarkets are responding.
Waitrose Supermarkets has a Forgotten Cuts campaign promoting cheaper meats from liver to pig's feet. Ingredients common a generation ago, but not today. The difference is substantial. 25.99 British pounds per kilo for a juicy sirloin steak, more than $20 a pound. Just 3.99 a kilo for shoulder of lamb, about $3.45 a pound.
We found that less than half of 18 to 34-year-olds were regularly making a stew, which is sad because actually that's a big part of British cooking tradition, and it's a very economic way of cooking.
Consumers, it seems, are happy to embrace some cheaper cuts, but not all.
I couldn't eat offal to save my life.
No, I wouldn't do that. I'd rather have lentils.
Pig's ears, pressed and then jelly.
British chef Fergus Henderson insists that what he calls traditional nose-to-tail dining can be tasty too. His restaurant's menu includes traditional favorites like chitterlings, a more appetizing word for intestines, also roast bone marrow and ox heart.
These are the whole animal, nose-to-tail. Seems to be polite, once you knock it on the head. Also seems to be common sense. Tripe.
Right, yeah.
Which seems to terrify everyone, the word tripe. But it shouldn't. It's tripe is most soothing, reviving, uplifting dishes.
Perhaps the financial crisis will renew a taste for nose-to-tail delicacies, but save the gruel for when things get really bad.
Hey, if you're the kind of person who likes to find a positive spin on negative situations, this one's tailor-made right now. Please, I love ribeye steak, but I can't make beef bourguignon with it or a slow-braised dish that I like. A shank or a shoulder roast? Perfect. So give me fatty, stringy roasts all the time. I'll cook them all day till they fall to pieces. Try making pulled pork with a loin or tenderloin. Have fun with that. It's like eating a shoe. I'll pick up a shoulder for a few bucks a pound. Cook that thing over low heat all day in your crock pot even, if you're not home. I'm telling you, you'll be in pig heaven. Literally pig heaven. And I'm thinking this might be a positive for foodies out there. And we'll be forced to cut back, eat less desirable cuts of meat. You know, maybe we'll actually try liver or kidneys. We hadn't thought about it before. And hey, maybe we'll like it. You know, wouldn't that be a shame if we actually liked those things and then got hooked on them? All I can tell you is that when I discovered the beauty that is yakitori and eat chicken hearts and chicken feet for the first time, I could not turn back from that. I'm just looking forward now. Because here I am eating toads and frogs. You step off, Kermit. I'm hungry. And on that note, I'm going to go. All right? Thanks for tuning in. I hope you'll tune in again. If it's available in your area, give Maui Brewing a try. Big Swell IPA, excellent beer. I highly recommend this. It's very good, very full-bodied beer. Not a hot bomb, just a delicious beer from Hawaii, no less. Thanks to Patrick and Rachel at the brewery for their hospitality, for the excellent beer, thebrewery.com. And remember, they're going to be at the Great American Beer Festival this month. So if you're going to go, definitely go look for them, try his beers. Do me a favor. Please see him. Tell him Phil sent you, okay? Music in this episode by The Crystal Method. Go to the iTunes store, download the entire catalog. Direct links to all songs on My Life as a Foodie we have on our website, zeroface.wordpress.com. And don't forget to check out the Beer Safari, okay? Beersafari.com. It's a jungle of beer. My name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie, and I'll see you all again soon. Ciao.